Sup, nerds? It's basketball. Welcome to Horse, a basketball podcast about everything except for the wins and losses. My name is Mike Schubert, and I'm joined by my trusted co-host, the Portland, Oregon, once having a WNBA team, to Portland, Oregon, once again in the future, having a WNBA team. It's Adam Amawala. Adam, how's it going?
Welcome to the fold, Lady Blazers. Just kidding, obviously.
Now, they have not said what the name is going to be, but I would assume that they are going to bring back the name from Portland's team, The Fire. And I had to remind myself that The Fire existed because they were only around from 2000 to 2002. It was this weird time in the WNBA where they expanded, like they added a good chunk of teams in 2000, and then like a bunch of them didn't last very long.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of something that companies do a lot, which is like they have good early returns and they're like, let's expand wildly. And then it's too quick for it to be successful.
Yes. So I'm looking it up right now. In 2000, they added the Soul from Miami, also only lasted 2 years. The Fire from Portland, only 2 years. And then the Indiana Fever doing well. And my beloved Seattle Storm doing quite well. So yeah, they had the league started in 97. They added two teams in 98, two teams in 99, and then four teams in 2000. And all of them were fine except for the two from 2000.
Right. So now with the Bay Area team and then this team, that'll bring the league up to
15 teams.
15. Well, don't they want it to be even?
That makes me think that there's going to be one more team. And please, 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 please give me the Houston Comets. Bring back Houston's greatest sports franchise. The Houston Comets, I'm going to have to do a whole, that actually happened about the Houston Comets, because they were absurd. They were around from 97 to 2008, and they won four championships in a row, 97, 98, 99, and 2000.
Right, which is what the Aces are trying to equal this year.
Well, the Aces are trying to go for the three-peat this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
But how did the Comets, I guess, like you said, you'll have to do that actually happened about it. But like, it seems hard to believe that a team that was that successful and seemingly had fans could cease to be. But I guess the Sonics did too, and they're gone.
I think it was just like a money thing. I don't think the WNBA as a whole was doing well in the late 2000s, and the Comets fell from grace afterwards. So their four championships were 97 through 2000, and then they dissolved in 2008. So I think by that time they weren't as good. But I just have such a love for them just because my buddy Grant always used to, and he's like a big Houston guy, loves Houston, the city, rappers from Houston, all the sports teams. And he always would say, when talking about the Comets, he would call them, oh, Houston's greatest sports franchise. Like, and I just always had such an affinity for the way he would refer to the Comets that I loved the Comets as well. And they got to bring him back. Like, especially Cheryl Swoops, if she comes back as like a part owner, that would be super cool. Like, I don't know, that'd be fun. Like, woman-owned team too. Yeah. That would be fantastic. So yeah, the fact that there's 15 makes me think that they're going to try to have some more in there. But oh yeah, so the recent additions are they're adding a Toronto team, a Golden State team, and now this Portland team. So those are the three.
Right, so we've gone from 12 to 15, but you would think we'll probably go from 12 to 16.
Yeah, so I would think so. It would be weird to have 15. I feel like 16 is nice, and we'll just have to see. Speaking of all the teams, I've recently been doing trivia at a bar near me in New York, and they always have one question, which is like a multiple answer thing. So they'll give some sort of thing, and you have to pick like 8 out of the 10 somethings. So the one most recently was the top 10 states in the U.S. that have the most Starbuckses in them. And apparently one of these, the week or two before I started doing this regularly with my friends, was name 6 WNBA teams. And come on, talk about a layup. Ah, furious I wasn't there for that. I would have just written all 12 just to spite them.
Or all 15.
Yes, my goodness. Well, now let's get into the basketball. We've talked about it a little bit, but we're going to talk about it some more. And in order to get ready for it, we're going to head to the Teal Memorial Locker Room, which has just, it won consecutive championships for best locker room, much like the Comets. Wow. It's won a whole lot of best locker room competitions.
Well, that's an important contest to win.
Mm-hmm. You know what else is important?
Having patrons so we can keep doing this show that we love.
Yes. Shout out to all of our patrons. Shout out to our producer-level patrons, Polly Burge, Salvatore Testa, Siobhan Ellsbury, Don't Go Chasing Taco Falls, Bang Bang, Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed, Steph Curry for Valkyrie.
Ah, shout out to the Bay Area WNBA team. Nicely done.
Mm-hmm. Their color scheme looks awesome.
Yeah.
Hi, Trish, Chase Underulo, Naked Rachel, Sidney Crosby as a Vampire, Chelsea's Cousin, Ginger Spurs Boy, Balls to the Walls, and Mats Furuli. And you know what else is nice to have?
A cocktail every now and again.
Every now and again, and to not have to pay $38, which I can only assume that is now what cocktails cost, since when I last visited it,
that's only during happy hour. They're $58 during regular hours.
That is wild. I'm so out on buying cocktails and stuff. Yeah. Sometimes I will walk past bars that have, you know, the sandwich boards with the happy hour thing, and it's like, get a Bloody Mary for $16 at happy hour. Be like, what's the normal price? What's happening?
Yeah, and it's also always an adjustment to come back from a place where it's cheaper. Like, I was just in South Korea for 2 weeks drinking delicious soju for like $1.30 US.
It's unbelievable. Nuts.
Yeah.
If anyone's ever going to Korea, you just drink your metric weight in soju as much as you can, because it's
literally cheaper than water.
That's like Germany and beer. It's nuts. And I had had soju before. I liked it when we were over there. I knew it was cheap. I didn't realize that it's like $10 a bottle in America. Mm-hmm. Like, it's wild. Absolutely wild. Anyway, Shaker and Spoon is something that you can use. And if you go to shakerandspoon.com/horse, you can get $20 off your first box. It's about half off. And the box has all of the things that you need to make 4 servings of 3 different cocktails that all use the same liquor. You just provide the liquor. They provide everything else. You get the ingredients. You get the instructions. You can keep those forever and continue to make the drinks. Sometimes you get more than what you need, so you can have leftover like spicy jalapeno syrup and stuff like that. So it's fun. It's cool. I've done it. It's a cool thing to do if you're having people over, or if you just want to spice up, you know, watching the WNBA playoffs or whatever have you. So go to shakerandspoon.com/horse and sign up for a box today.
There you go.
Now, unless you're listening on Patreon to get access to ad-free episodes, you're going to hear words from a few sponsors, make it feasible for us to be not in the red making the show. And then once those ads are complete, we'll get back into this episode of Horse. All right, Adam, what do you got going on in the Mama Walla world?
Yes, well, I've just returned back from South Korea. It was a wonderful experience, and I'm sure I'll talk about that more soon. But I don't think I have anything new on the books, so it's the same stuff that I've already talked about. As this episode comes out, if you're listening in real time, I will be in Albuquerque, New Mexico this coming weekend. That is the final weekend of September, which, of course, is the 26th. 27th and 28th, doing a bunch of shows in and around the Albuquerque area. I guess this one's kind of new. If you're really rich and you're like in the Hamptons, I'm going to be in Sag Harbor, the place where Justin Timberlake got arrested for being an asshole. If you could be arrested for being an asshole, he'd be arrested every day. But the point is, he was driving drunk. Anyway, that is Saturday, October 5th, that I'm going to be out at the Bay Street Theater in Sag Harbor. I'm going to be in Poughkeepsie, New York on Friday, October 18th. Still working on getting that Philly date locked in, hopefully for November, but I'll let you know. November 7th, I will be headlining the Arlington Draft House in Arlington, Virginia. And I'm going to be doing some shows in Toronto, TBD, the weekend of November 21st through 23rd. And then in December, you can catch me in Pittsburgh on the weekend of the 6th and 7th, in Connecticut on the weekend of the 13th and 14th. And then make sure to come see me headlining Zany's in Chicago on Sunday, January 12th.
Are you doing your annual thing where you do a big headline New York show the day I leave to go to Texas? Because I might be able to catch it this year.
That is to be determined. Okay. I'm teasing something that is not even in any way real. But I feel like I should film a comedy special. That's like what people do now. And I've never done that. And I'm kind of, I want to like save up my asking people to come out until I'm doing that, because I probably would do it in the New York or New Jersey area. So I don't have an answer, but I hope not.
Ooh, okay.
So we'll see.
Fun. Sweet.
What do you have going on?
So if you are listening to this the day it came out, you can, if you're in New York City, attend the New York City show for the Newest Olympian, where we're covering the first 2 chapters of The Son of Neptune. But if you have the internet, you can watch the stream either live tonight at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time on Monday, the 23rd of September, or it comes with a 1 week replay. So if you're listening to this and it's past Monday, you're still good. So we're doing a live show covering the first two chapters of the second book in the sequel series for the Percy Jackson books. And it's going to be fun and goofy and silly, and I'm super stoked about it. And then the other stuff we've got going on, I'm coming to Toronto, Boston, New Orleans, Dallas, Philly. The DC show that was going to be on the 26th, unfortunately, had to get rescheduled. And that's going to be on December 3rd. If you already had tickets to it, they should have emailed you and you can get a reschedule. So that's December 3rd. And something that will go live, not at the time of recording, but at the time you're hearing this, the newest show to the docket is going to be in Austin, Texas. And that's December 16th. So
nice.
That is going to be the only Texas show I'm doing around December. So if you want to come to a Texas show around then, come through there. And then I'm also doing that Dallas one on October 30th. And then I'm going to try to do Houston next year. Couldn't get a Houston show to line up for either of those. Same thing with San Antonio. So
sweet.
If you're holding out on different Texas cities, it's not coming. Come through to Austin or Dallas. But those are all available at schub.es/tour. Okay. Shall we do an NBQ&A? Do we have one?
We do. This one is from our pal and producer-level patron, Salvatore Testa. The question is, what are the arguments for and against picking up and starting Chris Paul? Now, to clarify, this was before we knew officially where Chris Paul had landed, but Chris Paul has signed with the San Antonio Spurs. So I'm going to use this as an opportunity for us to discuss what we think of that signing and how we think that's going to play out.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Salvatore sent this when the trade happened, because he is a big Spurs fan, or I guess the signing happened. So maybe this was inspired by that, maybe it wasn't. But all things considered, I think this is the perfect situation for both Chris Paul, the player, and San Antonio, the team, because yeah. San Antonio is currently in the situation where they're not worried about winning games. They're just worried about doing whatever helps Victor Wembanyama. They're in kind of that nice situation of, if they don't do well, they don't win a lot of games, fine, we'll get another good draft pick. If we start winning games, okay, cool. That means our teammates are playing well and we figured something out. Maybe some veterans or free agents want to come to our team earlier than expected. So they're in like the optimal situation. And Chris Paul's the perfect person to have come through for that. It's very reminiscent of when Chris Paul came to the Thunder and people thought he was washed then. And that was like 5 years ago. But that was the thing where the Thunder at that time just had a bunch of young dudes and they were like, we got to get an adult in the room to run the offense and facilitate. And then Chris Paul played out of his mind and the Thunder surprised everyone and made the playoffs. They didn't go very far, but like everyone had them being one of the worst teams in the league and they snuck into the playoffs. So the Spurs are almost in the exact same situation. I think it's a perfect pickup for both of them. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think I keep wondering which team is going to be the last team that Chris Paul plays for, but he continues to keep hanging around. But yeah, the amount of pick and roll dunks that are going to happen with Chris Paul on a team with Victor Wembanyama, it'll be interesting to see what the plan is for, like, how much they play together, if Paul is supposed to be starting. Have we heard if he's going to be starting or not?
I would imagine that he would be. I don't think he goes on to a non-competing situation to not start.
Yeah. But I mean, Chris Paul has been playing for long enough that there was a time during Chris Paul's NBA career that Victor Wembanyama was certainly shorter than him and arguably not even alive. Like, it's close,
right.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Right? I think Paul was a rookie in like the mid 2000, like 2005 or something like that.
Yeah, 04 or 05 draft.
Yeah. But what were we saying? I'm sorry.
I just think this could be a situation where he might just, because with Chris Paul, like, he is good, but he's not good enough where if you're contending, you can't have Chris Paul on the team. Like, he's just a step too slow offensively and defensively to, like, lead you to a championship or be, you know, one of your top three or four players. So this could be a situation where, like, he just plays on the Spurs until he retires. Maybe that's one season, maybe that's four. And then he just kind of molds into like a coach, like very much like how Tim Duncan kind of played and then a year of gap and then was on the coaching staff. I would not be surprised if you get Chris Paul doing that. And I'm sure the Spurs would love that, because if Chris Paul like on court coaches, basically player coach for Wemby for a couple of years, and then he's the like literal coach and just has that connection with Wemby still.
How about
that?
This
would be
how about
enormous.
In a couple of years, Pop retires quietly like Tim Duncan. Nobody even knows it's going to happen. Becky Hammon becomes head coach and Chris Paul becomes assistant coach.
I don't know that Becky would go back. She's had so much success with the Aces. Why would you leave? Like,
yeah.
At least until the Aces are bad. Like, until, I don't think she leaves the Aces until they start to, like,
it's true. There's no reason to leave, but I do think there was a lot of speculation a few years ago. Like, if there is someone in line to be the first NBA head coach who's a woman, Becky Hammon would be it. But yeah, you're right.
You know, maybe if the Aces continue to win, she's like, all right, I've done it. I've won X championships in the W. Let's see how I can do in the men. So
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, either way, we'll see.
But yeah, short answer is I think it's a great signing.
It's perfect. It's absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, and then if he gets hurt, like, it doesn't matter. Like, he can still be, he's on the team to be like the motivational veteran, inspirational, educational coach. Mm-hmm. So, like, even if he's hurt, he's going to be in the locker room, and I think it'll be great. So, A-plus all around. It's a perfect situation for both of them.
Yes, indeed. Let's get into full court press, shall we?
Let's do it. Get it? Like, the news?
I do.
So, breaking news, broken by himself, about himself, Woj.
The no self-Woj bomb.
Being Woj. The self-Woj bomb to, I guess, you know, take him out for he's gone. Yeah. It's over. So I think he posted a thing first.
Imagine if Shams posted it before he posted himself.
Dude, amazing. Would have been amazing.
Yeah.
Now, Woj himself, I don't know if I missed this. He captioned it 30 and then wrote this whole thing about how it was good, but like this job is too hard and he doesn't want to do it anymore. And then signed it 30. Did you understand what the 30 was? Has he been like doing this for 30 years or something?
I have no idea.
Damn. Okay, here's a comment. I'm not going to say their username because it has a very bad word in it. Woj enlightening me. No, nope. Woj enlightening me on last time, making me look up -30-. Apparently, it was to signify the end of a news transmission when telegraphs were used.
Whoa. Oh. Deep pull and reference, that is.
It is also the title of the last episode of The Wire.
Okay.
So some old school reference. Oh, cool. Yeah. So Woj himself tweeted out a statement where he, you know, it was all about like his story 37 years ago. He had his first time in working at the Hartford Courant, his first byline, and he never stopped basking in the thrill of it and all this other stuff. But he's, you know, saying he's thankful. Past 7 years at ESPN have been great. Thank you. Thank you. I'm out of here. And then Adam Schefter tweeted that Woj has agreed to become the general manager of the men's basketball program at St. Bonaventure, which I think is where he went to school.
That
the role includes
sense, yeah.
Name, image, and likeness allocation, recruiting, and supporting successful Bonnie's coach, Mark Schmidt. So I guess he will manage the NIL, which is where you can get paid to be in like commercials and sponsorships and stuff. If you are a player, you will recruit people and you also support people who like already work for the organization.
Right.
Feels like it could be a smart role for him just because his whole thing, like he's not a good journalist. Maybe he was, but at least like Woj as we know
he
him,
is good at having relationships with people.
Exactly.
And that's
he's a connections guy.
Right.
And that's what you need if you're going to be in the front office, especially of a college program, which I'm sure has less like under the table handshaky type stuff, but it's always kind of felt like the NCAA is a scratch my back, I'll scratch yours sort of thing.
Sure.
So I think it makes sense. Like makes more sense than him being like a coach or the president of basketball operations. Like it seems like he will be utilizing his connections in a different way. But I think what's awesome about all of this, because obviously you've got the Woj versus Shams rivalry. And again, this should be that actually happened now, especially with him retiring. But I love that he basically in his thing was like, this job sucks and I'm tired of it. Like any idiot who continues to do what I'm doing is a loser. Like he goes out winning on top of Shams, I think.
I guess that's true. I'm curious to see who's going to fill the power vacuum so that Shams does not monopolize the breaking news world.
Now, does ESPN just buy Shams? Like the because Woj is leaving a lot of money on the table. Reporting I saw said that Woj is walking away from $20 million. I mean, I'm sure he's making that, if not more, in the other one.
How could you make that much at a school like St. Bonaventure? He might be taking a pay cut so that he just doesn't have to do this job anymore.
I don't know. He's like, money is money. I mean, in his little tweet, I got to say, he did about it. He said, the craft transformed my life, but I've decided to retire from ESPN and the news industry. I understand the commitment required in my role, and it's an investment that I'm no longer driven to make. Time isn't an endless supply, and I want to spend mine in ways that are more personally meaningful. Awesome.
Fair enough.
Absolutely awesome.
Would you want to be married to a guy who does that for a living? You would never have his full attention.
Absolutely not. And I don't know Woj's process, but Shams has talked about what he has done, and it sounds awful. Like, he says, Shams has said he's on, like, he's awake 18 hours a day, and he's basically on his phone for like 16 of the 18 hours.
Oh, his screen time must be upsetting. How many tabs do you think he has open?
Oh, too many. But yeah, it seems like an awful job. It seems like a stressful job, because at any moment news can break. Like, you would be scared to sleep.
Yeah. Or you just leave your alerts on and get woken up constantly.
Yeah, it's why, like, I never, when like Bitcoin and stuff was going around and all of that, people are like, oh yeah, it's a 24-hour market. And I was like, so the stock market effectively could crash when I'm taking a nap? Like, when I'm going to bed for the night? That sounds awful. No way. I'm not investing in that. Get out of here. So
yeah, I'm with you.
Shout out to Woj. Good luck in your new situation. I will be interested, as you said, is there going to be a new Woj? Or are we going to let this like weird fascination with breaking news die? Or did they just try to scoop up Shams?
Probably the last one. Breaking news is not going anywhere.
Yeah. So that's what's going on in the MenBA. Over in the WNBA, we talked about the expansion into Portland. That is super cool. I'm excited to see how that goes and what their uniforms and everything looks like, if they are the Fire. So that's very exciting. But other exciting things are happening. The playoffs are about to start. You got a couple teams fighting for those final spots to get into the playoffs, or depending on what you are, fighting to not get in the playoffs so that you can try to get Paige Buckers on your team, because she will probably enter the draft for the next WNBA draft. And she's very good at basketball and will be highly sought after. So there's a couple of teams where I think they wouldn't be upset if it didn't work out to make the playoffs, because there's like a steep like line of demarcation between the rankings. So you've got a situation
now. Paige Buckers is really good.
Really good, really good. Yeah, so basically top 1 through 7, the 7th seed right now, we're recording this on September 18th, is the Phoenix Mercury, and they're 19-20. And the 6th seed is the Fever, they just clinched, and they are 20-19. Now, fighting for that last spot, you have a lot of teams, it's like a big drop, because you have 19-20, and then the current 8th seed is the Atlanta Dream, and they are 14-25. And then the Mystics are 13-26, the Sky are 13-26, and then the Wings are 9-30. So the Wings are out of it, but technically, the Dream, Mystics, and Sky, I think, can all still make it. But I think that all three of them wouldn't hate not making it.
No, and also, and this happens in other sports, but like, no team who's under 500 should ever be in the playoffs, period, in any sport.
Yeah, that would be fun. I agree.
It's happened before.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, especially the East and West. Like, there's been times in the NBA where the 12 seed in the West is better than the 8 seed in the East. So things can be weird. But the other thing of why you would not want to make the playoffs, only 4 teams don't make the playoffs. And that means there's only 4 teams in the lottery. So your odds of getting Paige are way better. And then there's also a certain situation. We'll have to see how the standings shake out and stuff. But because of trades, there might be a situation where like one team actually has 2 shots at getting Paige, depending on how it finally shakes out with like lottery picks and all kind of stuff like that. So it'll be an interesting draft. And I am excited to see how it shakes out. But I'm also just excited for the playoffs. It's going to be really fun. WNBA playoffs are always a really good time. Couldn't recommend watching them enough. You get some really interesting things where the first round is best of 3 series. So the first 2 games are played by the higher seeded team at home. And then the 3rd game is away. So like if the home team doesn't take care of business, there's a lot of stress for that final game. So it's very exciting there. So playoffs are going to be fun. And then other thing going on, AJ Wilson scored 1,000 points, which no one has ever done in a season before.
Yeah.
That is wild. So she set the record and is continuing to go. And she's just having a hell of a season. If she doesn't win MVP, unanimous vote, I will seriously question the voters of MVP.
Yeah.
But she's had a wild year. And thankfully, everyone is kind of giving her her flowers as she deserves.
Now, I'm curious, and maybe you know the answer to this. I know they've expanded the number of games. Did she accomplish that in fewer games than... You know what I mean? Like, you know, when like the home run record,
because Drew Lloyd's
like Roger Maris hit 61 home runs in a season that was 154 games long. So at that time it was like, oh, someone needs to do it before that game number for it to be legit.
Yes, I am pretty sure that she did, because Jewel Lloyd of my beloved Seattle Storm set the record last season in 40 games. And right now the Aces have only played 39 games. So I don't know if she did it in game 39 or game 38.
But either way.
Either way, she did it. So it wasn't just a more games thing. And if I'm being fair, like the Jewel Lloyd record last season, even though it was on my, you know, on my favorite team, I think that, like, I'd have to look at the points per game thing, but I'm pretty sure she only set the record because of more games being played. Right. So I think Aja straight up earned it, and you can't really question it. And that was also the case with some of the records, like Angel Reese's rebounding record as a rookie, and maybe even as like not a rookie. I think she set like the double doubles record, just like straight up.
Yeah, Caitlin Clark had got the assist record.
Right, Caitlin Clark is leading rookies in points, assists, and 3-pointers made. She set the rookie assist one and did it before like the previous winner, who was like surprisingly a long time ago. Mm. So yeah, there have been records being broken, and it's not just because the season is longer now. So. Unfortunately, Angel Reese is out for the season with a wrist injury, so yeah. It seems like Caitlin Clark will get the Rookie of the Year award, no question. I think that's fine because I didn't want to have to deal with the discourse. Mm-hmm. Like, the discourse of, like, who should win? Should they split the award, which I hate? And the NBA has done that a couple of times, so I don't know. I'm glad that at least we don't have to deal with the discussion around it of who's more deserving. Did Caitlin only win it because she's more famous? Like all this kind of crap. So at the very least, it is a simpler situation, but unfortunately it came at the cost of Angel Reese getting injured.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks that like two of the three rookies that people were most excited about in Cameron Brink and Angel Reese both got hurt this year, but
that's just, you know, that's just how the league happens sometimes, and hopefully it won't be an issue going forward, and I'm sure they'll both bounce back in the future, and they'll be very exciting. And look, if Cameron Brink needs to take a whole lot of time to recover, as someone who the Seattle Storm owned the 2026 draft pick of the Los Angeles Sparks, if they just need to put her on ice for a whole nother season, that's fine by me. Just, you know, let her rest. Yeah. Make sure she's okay. Big minutes restriction. But yeah, that's what we've got going on. News-wise, a lot of fun stuff happening. I'm stoked for the WNBA playoffs, and we'll see how it all shakes out.
Absolutely.
So now to conclude this episode, we will be doing a very fun interview with someone that Adam knows from the comedy world who recently had a special come up, and it's got a wild basketball joke in it, and that kind of sparked the whole discussion that we had.
Yeah, so we're going to do an interview with Langston Kerman. He's a dude who I've known since way back in the day. It's a weird thing to be at the age where like people that I was at open mics with 12 years ago are now like all over the TV and have Netflix specials and stuff. Hopefully I will be one of those people that people say that about one day. But in the meantime, we've got a really fun interview coming up, so enjoy Langston. All right. As promised, we got a very special guest on the podcast today. You can listen to his podcast with David Bory. It's called My Mama Told Me. He's also a very talented actor, writer. I know him from the stand-up comedy world. You can check out his latest special. It's called Bad Poetry. It's on Netflix right now. And you can also see him starring in the show English Teacher, which I watched the pilot of last night. It's on FX and Hulu. It's very good. And I'm not just saying that to be nice. I really enjoyed it. Langston, how's it going, man?
Good. Thank you. This is so, what a warm, professional welcome, Adam. This is nice.
It doesn't always go that way. We've had to retake them before. We had Shane Torres, who I'm sure you know on the pod, and I gave him this great intro and then just didn't say his name. And he was like, that's not a good start. I was like, all right, well.
That's okay.
You know, I'm doing my best. But Langston, whatever. Thanks for coming on. I've known you for, I feel like it's been at least 10 years through the comedy scene. Yeah, because when did you move to New York?
I moved to New York in 2013.
Okay.
I left in 2017.
Yeah.
And have been in LA since. So I met you in New York. It was probably 2013, 2014. So it's
back in the days of the Fancy Show, which is a reference that only you and I, if Lane is listening, will understand.
And a few alcoholic bikers used to hang out.
Yes,
there.
Yes. That is actually the primary demo for this podcast. So we're hoping to reach as many of them as possible. But Langston, I'll be honest, the impetus for me wanting to have you on, other than the fact that I find you incredibly funny, and you did this really unique thing on your special that you don't see a lot in comedy specials. You were extremely funny and good, and I loved that. I really was a big fan of that. So that's been lacking somewhat, but it was terrific. I had a chance to watch it this morning, and there's a particular joke on it that I was like, oh shit, I have to have Langston on our basketball podcast. You tell a story. This is where I want to start before we even get into any of your background. You tell a very interesting story about your mother having been with a fairly famous and infamous mascot, Benny the Bull.
That's right.
Yes. If it's possible, I don't think anyone's going to stop us. We're probably going to play the audio.
My mom married Benny the Bull. And not at his best. No. Don't clap for that. Shame on you. It's hurting my family. And the next question you're naturally asking, you want to know, is how did he lose his job as Benny the Bull, right? How does one lose such a coveted position as Chicago mascot Benny the Bull? I'll tell you, he was fired from his job as Benny the Bull because, and I'm not making this up, in 2004, he got caught selling drugs after a game in full costume. Just standing in the parking lot. Even the police walked up like, Benny, what are you doing? Those are your work clothes.
But can you give us a little context about the makings of this joke, which I believe to be true?
The makings are a lived experience, I think. That's how that one got made, and not in a way that I enjoyed, but certainly, I guess, fostered a really nice bit for the special. But yeah, my mom's third husband was a former Benny the Bull. So she married him in the wake of his career after he had long lost his job as Benny the Bull. But he, from the years, I believe, 98 to like 2004.
Rough time for the Bulls.
He was in a post-Jordan era.
The Cornell David led Bulls had him as
when Jordan finally handed over the keys to Tony Kukoc.
Yeah, exactly.
Is when he jumped on and decided that this was his time, and he, I guess, was relatively successful at it, and then lost the job because, drum roll, he got fired for selling drugs after the game.
Here's the question: who's he selling them to? Is it just
whoever's buying
people in attendance? Is it people working at the arena?
I think, to his credit, he had like a situation set up where he could sell like weed to players. Remember, this is 2000. This is early 2000s, 2004. Okay. Access to like good marijuana in Chicago probably wasn't as simple for a giant, lanky man who everybody recognizes from their televisions.
Sure.
And so I think he just became an easy access point for selling it to players. That's the legend that I always took from it, but truly I never asked, and it could have been just him posted up outside in the costume. Like,
you guys
up?
Have a fun one? Did what's you up? Like that half-court shot I made? Would you also like some weed?
Everybody dance now! And then, you know, he's just throwing weed bags at
people. Well, some people suspect that when he does the infamous popcorn spilling, there's actually some of those pieces of popcorn are laced with drugs. That's how he disseminates it to the kids.
Okay. Yeah. Now we're getting
this is a conspiracy that I've invented for the purposes of this interview. Nobody thinks
I would
that.
Not be surprised if a police officer in attendance is like, there's fentanyl in the popcorn. Like, they would do it. They would accuse.
And also, if you think about what makes a great mascot, you have to assume drugs are involved at least some of the time. There's a lot of energy.
I don't want that to be a sober person.
No, no. How could it?
You know what I mean? Like, I want to believe that, like, oh, you got to drink weird to be able to, like, build up that kind of confidence every night. I don't want that to just be your raw personality.
No.
Because then you should be president, and why'd you waste all your time?
Yeah, I would have more questions if it's someone who's like, nope, never touched the stuff, been sober my whole life.
Yeah,
I just have this naturally. But so I associate you with Chicago. Based on Wikipedia, you're from Oak Park. But what's kind of your origin story as far as like where you grew up, getting into comedy, how basketball ties into that, if it does?
It does.
What's the Langston story?
Oh, that's a fun. Oak Park, Illinois is a suburb of Chicago. It's about, depending on where in Chicago you want to be, you can cross a street and be in Chicago, or, you know, it's right. Like 20, 30 minutes from downtown. Point being, I grew up there, and it's a very quaint, beautiful suburb. Despite all the chaos of my home, I grew up in nice circumstances generally. Mm-hmm. And then I went to school. this is, we're talking basketball. When I went off to college, I played basketball all through high school, was cut from the team my junior year, was put on JV, and that's how I ended up starting writing poetry and shit. Was like, ah, not ha- I
a
had
full pivot, a full 180.
I had too much free time. I needed purpose. I was like, I'm just gonna join the spoken word club, and ended up like liking that and succeeding in that a lot more than like the bench warmer version of my high school career. Sure. That would have continued. But that said, when I went to college, I actually played as a practice player for our women's basketball team.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I had friends that did that at Rice, and that was always a cool thing that if I had more free time, I would have considered. But I was so busy. But that's awesome.
What were you busy doing? What were you doing?
I had engineer major, business minor, which now I use because I'm a full-time podcaster. Look at me go.
Yeah, it was fucking awesome. We got free like women's gear, which was dope because it was identical to the men's gear, right? It was exactly like the men's gear across for the two teams, but it said women's on it. But from a distance, it looked like I made the basketball team.
Yeah, so other than this, saying women's and the buttons were on the other side for reasons that none of us understand all this time. I don't get it.
Like I said, from a distance, you can't tell which side them buttons are on. And so they were pumped. They all, women, they'd see me and they'd be like, oh, Langston upgraded. And then they'd see and they're like, oh, Langston's got a complicated story to tell.
Wait, and where did you go to school? Undergrad?
University of Michigan.
Oh, so okay.
These people with the ball. I mean, this is not some like scrub team here.
Well, I want to also give the caveat that they were at their worst when we did it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not taking responsibility for it, but I will say that they were last in the Big Ten and we weren't helping. You know what I mean?
It would be funny if in post-game interviews they're like, man, it just doesn't feel like we're giving it our all in practice. You know, it just kind of feels like we need someone to really challenge us in the practice gym. Yeah.
And then your boy showed up.
Now do you hoop at all anymore? Like if it came to be, I mean you're doing some pretty impressive things. If whoever the powers that be came to you and said like, hey, you want to do the celebrity all-star game, would you accept that invitation or would you be like, I don't want to embarrass myself out there?
I'd play. I definitely wouldn't play as hard as I could. I think something in me would want to save whatever memory of how good I used to be as I think that's all we're doing as adult men is kind of keeping these little keepsakes of who we were. And so like a little piece of me still wants to be good at basketball. And then I watch all these Instagram videos and YouTube videos of children doing moves I was never capable of. And I'm like,
oh yeah,
I can't like get out here and try again. I'm going to lose my life.
No, I mean, you're talking to two guys, and Mike and I, who are still very competitive. And I'll be honest, I did watch the special this morning. The only joke that offended me was the story of you heckling an adult softball league, because that's what Mike and I do. We're adult softball nerds. I don't know if I could handle being heckled by a man on mushrooms.
I'm going to be honest with you. You can't. I was on fire that day. I would have eaten you alive.
I think the key approach to Central Park softball and us playing it is that you have to recognize the ridiculous nature of it.
Sure.
And there's certainly a lot of people in our league that don't. And we do a couple different leagues, like some more chill, some more like beer leagues, some that are like more competitive. And in one of the, were you there for the game, Adam, where a guy broke his hand because he got out that one time?
Oh, yeah, because like, he punched the metal
He like flew out with the bases loaded. Whoa. And, you know, had this opportunity. And then he like smacked like a metal storage bin where they put like baseball equipment and stuff on the side of the park. And he broke his hand. This is a Monday 2 p.m. league. Like, he had to go home to his wife or his girlfriend or whoever and be like, what happened? Oh, I got angry in my adult softball league for fun. And I broke my hand. And now I have to pay thousands of dollars.
We could have won this non-playoff game.
Exactly.
I think it was not the playoffs. I think it was like a game leading, it was towards the end of the regular season. So like truly no stakes.
Sure.
Oh, it's there have been brawls. Yes. There are now league mandated bats because people are like hollowing out bats and like juicing them up. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, that scares me. I was once playing pickup in LA. And a dude like went super hard for a ball on some shitty outdoor courts, whatever, and slipped face forward and shattered all of these.
Nope.
It was like four teeth just like turned into powder on the court. And if that wasn't a revelation for me of being like, oh, bro, I'm 30.
Yes.
Like I'm 30, both in the literal and in the active sense. Like I have no, there's no achievement to be won here. I'm not going to power up and suddenly, you know, it's not going to be like, hey, I think we got to scout that guy. Like that's not... It's not happening. So yeah, no, I'm chilling, man. I'm gonna play real soft.
Now, did you ever write any poetry pertaining to sports or basketball?
No, I wasn't a loser.
I'm gonna go ahead and not share the story about myself that I would have shared had you not had that reaction.
This isn't Freddie Prinze Jr. and She's All That in the hacky sack scene. You know what I mean?
That's a deep pull, but I do know what you mean.
Yeah. I was writing about bitches and shit.
Sure. Until, I mean, I'm going by your special here, but until a child shit on your poetry and crushed your poetry.
Yeah, no, that took a lot out of my steam for sure. I taught high school and versions of elementary and middle school for 6-7 years. And in that time, there were a lot of children, one in particular, who really, really hurt my feelings.
Teenage kids are elite at being mean. That's what they do.
Well, they're empty inside.
Sure.
You understand? Yeah. They've filled nothing inside themselves or in the greater good of the world. And so they feel no shame in sort of reflecting that back out on the world.
I'm starting to see why you're not a teacher anymore.
We talked about your playing days, but as far as fandom, do you have a particular team you go for? Are you more of like a particular athlete guy? Do you just kind of watch the whole league kind of thing? What's your approach?
I up until last year, and I say this with no shame now, but there were years where I felt like I needed to apologize for it. But I've been a Golden State fan for a long time.
Okay.
I just liked that team that they put together early on. I was like, nah, fuck with whatever this arrangement was. And then obviously they turned into what some people call the most obnoxious winners of a generation. And so I think Klay Thompson might be the funniest human being on the planet Earth.
He's incredible. He's
great.
Truly just a spectacular being. And so now with this... with the breaking up of that team, I don't know what I'm gonna do, because obviously Steph is still Steph. Draymond's he's doing what he can, you know. Yeah.
But I mean, Benny the Bull instance notwithstanding, you must have grown up as a Bulls fan, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I grew up in the Jordan era of basketball. I think everybody was a Jordan fan and to some extent a Bulls fan during that era. But yeah, I wanted to be a Bulls fan. I got, you know, the D-Rose years. I refelt the excitement, even the Jimmy Butler years, where it's kind of felt like Jimmy might be able to will us into something that the world told us was impossible. Big fan, but it's hard. It's hard when you're that consistently losing to stay an active
Well, I think it's like we get older, we have more going on in our lives. You're like busy work wise. You're married. You got kids. Like at what point do you just say to yourself, I can't justify watching a team that's going to win 35 games?
Yeah, no, I don't need to watch Zach LaVine jog. You know what I mean? Like
but that's his whole thing, Langston.
I'm going to need a little bit more pepper in your step from a team that's that's going to inspire me. You know what I mean?
I get it. And it's funny that you mentioned both that phenomenon and then also the phenomenon of rooting for the Warriors, because I am a Knicks fan and always have been.
Yeah.
But there was like mid 2010s, we were like actively tanking. So I was like, okay, I won't lose my fandom here, but I'm not going to subject myself to watching Ramon Sessions as our starting point guard in his 15th year in the NBA. So I was like, let me still follow the Knicks, but then we have a new team to watch. And I was moving to Oakland for work, and I had watched that playoff series where they beat the Nuggets and then they almost beat the Spurs that one year. And yeah. I was like, these guys are fun. And I wanted the Knicks to draft Steph, and he never fell to us. So I was like, all these stars align. I was like, I'll just start, you know, like watching Golden State games and going to you know, their games now that I'm in Oakland. And that was the first championship year. So I had this like weird, you know, like their, you know, backup team affinity thing. And then they got too good. And then I'm kind of feeling what you're feeling, where you're like embarrassed to root for them. Like, you don't want to tell anyone, like, you know, yeah. I'm secretly still rooting for them to win in the KD era, but I'm like, oh, but no one asked me about it, please.
Yeah. But it's also obnoxious because every other team that's winning, you know what I mean? Lakers fans don't ever apologize for being Lakers no. fans. Like, they just, yeah. and they're the most winningest franchise or maybe Boston.
I guess technically now they're second to Boston, right? Boston broke the tie in this.
But. Yeah.
Most recent
finals. But either way, both of those teams are far more obnoxious than anything that Golden yeah. State fans could offer 100%. To fandom.
Has your career, or just like, you know, being in LA for the time you have, has that afforded you the ability to meet any basketball players, or, you know, sit courtside or anything like that?
I've gotten to sit courtside-ish. I've never been
court adjacent.
Yeah, feet in the aisle, but I'm certainly like down on the floor, right behind people with their feet in the aisle. Yeah. But I, in 2017, I actually went and did, I got to do like this hosting thing for Oculus, that, and they were basically, how do I explain this? They were one of the sponsors for the All-Star game. And so I
like
went
the VR
to the
thing?
The VR shit. Yeah. And so I was hosting sort of like this courtside view of the All-Star game
shit.
Where like they were putting me in the locker rooms. They were like, they were having me like at the front of press conferences and shit. I'm like literally courtside.
To be like, this would be your view of, like, if you were using the Oculus.
Yeah,
you were
I'm like, damn, ain't that crazy? Up. LeBron, big as hell, y'all. And they're like, whoa, he is big. I was actually at the press conference. This is how fun that was. I was at the press conference where LeBron, people kept asking. This is when Kyrie first started saying that the earth was flat. And they were asking LeBron James, they're still teammates. They're sitting their press conference booths right next to each other. LeBron keeps getting the question, do you think the earth is flat, or what do you think of what Kyrie says? And LeBron literally turns to Kyrie and goes, yo, Ree, you think the earth is flat? And then Kyrie goes, yeah.
It would have been even more LeBron for him to be like, listen, you know, I talked to Galileo. I remember telling Galileo, man, I don't think this earth is flat.
Galileo, I think you're missing the side, my man.
With you being in LA, I feel like now it's an interesting time in this offseason. It's going to be the first time where the Clippers have their own arena. They've got the new Intuit Dome.
Yeah.
And they're also in a weird spot where they lost Paul George. So there's still hype, but not as much hype. Being in LA, what is the vibe now with the Clippers finally now not being in the same arena as the Lakers? Do people care? Is this just like a all right, whatever situation?
I don't think people give a shit about the Clippers, man. I think they're probably excited for the arena. You know what I mean? Like, I think the concept of like going to see a game in this new space, and
yeah,
that's obviously like built for prime entertainment is going to be dope. And I'm sure their tickets will be, you know, well sold and shit. They still have Kawhi. That ain't nothing to shake a stick at if he ever plays again. But nobody cares about the Clippers out here.
The correlation between like Nets, like Brooklyn Nets to Knicks and Clippers to Lakers is a direct line. Like, it's the exact same vibe where, like, I don't care how new your stadium is. I don't care who you try to buy. You don't have the history. You're always going to be second fiddle to like the team. And it feels kind of similar. I've never lived in LA, but that's the impression I get.
In a current, and I hate to be rude about this, but even in a current world, the Nets have historically been better than the Knicks.
Yeah, I guess. Not the past couple of years, but in the past decade, probably. Yeah,
true.
For sure.
Yeah, if you take a larger sample size, yes.
Yeah, I think the Nets should be the dominant team of New York, and yet not only are the Knicks the dominant team of New York, they still somehow are a topic of conversation every year, sort of in a global sense, even though none of us have seen them win anything.
But now we're good. It's I think it's just when you, for the longest time, we were the only team in New York. And it's so popular for New York to have two teams that for years and years, and the Knicks have been around since the 40s, you just only had the one basketball team.
Right.
So I think because the Nets only moved out here in the late 2000s, it was just like, no, you're the New Jersey team. What are you doing? I think they just had such a long run of being like the only team in New York, and just doesn't matter that we're bad. We had enough like runs of being good, you know, winning the championships in the 70s, contending in the Jordan years, and then somewhat kind of for the small blip of the Melo years where we were spicy.
And that 1 year you guys made the finals with Latrell and
oh yeah.
Yeah, the lockout Jordan 98.
Yes. Yeah, that was a fun one.
Back when Allen Houston was the greatest shooter we had ever seen, and now nobody mentions him once. No, he was a great player, but the greatest we had ever seen was the conversation.
Ridiculous. <Yeah. laughs> Now, all right, I'm curious. So when I think of your comedy, and this is even like from when I first knew you, I don't know how long into comedy you were when you moved to New York, but like one thing about your comedy that I've always loved is you pull off that trick where it's like, it's incredibly smooth. It feels very conversational. And like, that's the kind of comedy that I try to do and I gravitate towards. If you were to give me like a basketball comp for your comedy.
Oh, no.
What would it be? And then give me a basketball comp for your actual basketball. Mm-hmm.
Damn. Well, the basketball comp for my actual basketball is easier to think of.
Okay.
I think when I was a kid, my favorite player and kind of my favorite player to this day was Jason Kidd. And I think that is who I most wanted to mirror my game after. I think realistically, I didn't look as cool or as I didn't have the vision quite as precise as Jason Kidd did. But I think that's the basketball comp I admired the most. I think in terms of my actual comedy, what do I want my basketball comp to be? This is tough because it feels like if you name a name that's too good,
you're being very humble, but you can say LeBron if you want. You could say
he's got to be like somebody people respect but hasn't won anything. You know what I mean? Like that feels.
I think there's a way to thread the needle where like you're not saying LeBron, but you're also not like I'm the Timothy Mozgov of comedy. No one wants that.
I don't know. What am I doing? Rajon Rondo? I feel like it's...
I mean, if you're going for smooth, he was very smooth with his fake behind-the-back passes were always good.
And,
you know, the layup pump fakes.
You rise to the occasion in big moments. Playoff Rondo. Playoff Rondo.
Yeah, he was a well-respected player across the league, and he got on a lot of people's nerves at the same time. I think that's... I'll live with a Rajon.
Yeah, that's not good. Bad.
That's fun.
Yeah.
With you being a fan of Jason Kidd when you were younger, did you go the full level? Did you do his free throw thing where he kind of like wipes his butt? Like, did you do that? Or did you leave
first
it
of
to
all,
just the like?
He blew a little kiss.
Yeah, I think there's no butt wipe.
But he like wiped his thigh first.
I think he would wipe it off on his hand, on his, his.
It was on his leg, but it was close enough to his butt that when I was a kid, I was like, is Jason Kidd wiping his butt and then kissing his hand to honor his kid?
That is funny.
He had
if that's
a large
what he was
head.
Doing.
Yeah.
I did experiment. I do remember a coach telling us like you have to have a routine that every great player figures out a good free throw routine. And I do remember experimenting with stuff that did not physically match what I was, you know what I mean? Like you'd sit there and you'd like stomp three times and it's like, yeah, they do that because it locks them in, not because they're like trying to impress a man who yelled at them.
to me,
for missing.
Coming up with a free throw routine, especially as a kid intentionally, it's the basketball equivalent of when you like practice your own signature just in case you get famous one day.
100%.
Because that's exactly what it is. And I distinctly remember doing this as basketball. I was like, I'm frankly impressed that a coach told you to do it. Because for me, it was like, well, everyone does it. So I need to have a thing. And I remember experimenting with like, should I put the ball around my back? Should I put it over my head? Like how many dribbles is too many dribbles? I definitely, you know, I want to look cool, but not like I'm trying too hard, you know?
To be fair, the coach didn't tell me because he was like, you gotta have a signature, big dog. He was saying like, he was more saying it for the purposes of concentration and locking in. Right. If you have this repetitive motion, it sort of allows you to block out everything else that you should be focused on. Unfortunately, I think that kind of locking in is only actually only certain athletes are ever actually capable of it. The rest of us are all just kind of in our head and faking it, which is why we're not better at the sports that we've trained just as long in a lot of cases. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not like I didn't work hard at playing basketball. I just couldn't lock in the way that, you know, some of my peers could.
But along those lines, like, do you feel like that thing that NBA players have, do you feel like you have that as an artist? Like, are there moments where you feel yourself locking in, whether it's like to film that special or like you've got a big, you know, it's your first day on set of a big project?
Yeah, I actually, weirdly, Iman Shumpert and I went to high school together. We grew up.
Oh, cool. Sweet.
One of his older brothers is my age, and we grew up together. We played on YMCA teams all the way since he was a fourth grader, and then played through high school together.
Did he have the flat top back then, or was it a later edition?
That was a later edition.
If he had that in the fourth grade, that would have been incredible.
that wasn't active throughout our childhood. But he and I were talking fairly recently about sort of like how he was sort of speaking to his ability to truly block out an entire arena of people yelling whatever the fuck they're yelling, both good and bad, at him. And how, like, when he's playing basketball, it truly is just like silence. Like, he doesn't receive any of it. And I was saying that I think that the instinct of a comedian is so the exact opposite of that, that like my job in some ways is to never block a single thing out, to hear every whisper, to hear every like sort of like sweat drop inside of a room and be able to pivot on top of those weird moments. And so I think what I as a child felt like was a failure because I was playing basketball and not able to sort of like achieve this greater sort of level up that I think a lot of my peers were able to achieve, I later discovered in comedy was like, oh, this is perfect for that. Whatever that is in me that needs to know everything that's happening in the room is the exact thing I needed to be on stage.
Well, it's true. Like, a weakness in one field could actually be your biggest strength in another. And I think also, like, having just watched the special earlier today, one thing that you see in specials sometimes is that, like, even if the material's great, you're like, I don't know if I feel like this person was present. It didn't feel that way. Like, you,
thank you. Doing the special, means a lot.
Like, yeah, for sure. I mean, like, I'm no arbiter of comedy, but I think I have pretty good taste. And like the way you're reacting to even how people are reacting to certain setups or certain tags, where you're like very much in the moment and not just like, oh shit, well, I'm filming this for Netflix, so I better like move on to the next joke. Like, I think that's it takes a lot of skill to do that.
Yeah, I mean, and that's very sweet of you to say. I think the goal as an artist, I've always thought of the tapings, and somebody once told me this, and I don't remember who told me, so fuck them. But the special tapings, these sort of bigger moments, are the gift. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, you work really hard throughout like comedy. You do all these bad shows in basements in front of drunk bikers, whatever, so that at some point you can record something.
Right.
And the goal is not to then perform. The goal is to live in the gift. Right. Mm-hmm. So like, you earned it. This is yours. You should be present in that moment and really like locked in with the people who have chosen to share that moment with you, as opposed to sort of like in this recitation of all the things that sort of got you here. Cause to your point, it can feel detached, or at least make you feel like, I don't know what that was. I don't know if I connected at all with anybody.
Yeah. Cause I mean, I think when you watch a really good special, you have to have the crowd on your side. Like, anytime you're doing a good show, you want it to be that. And if you watch a special, like, sure, obviously the material is important, but what really separates, I think, just one that you enjoy versus one that you truly remember is when, you know, you feel like you were in the crowd, whether it's when you're watching or if you're listening to like a comedy album. So yeah, if you're not, like you're saying, listening to what the crowd is giving you, what is fun and stuff like that, if you're just like trying to be 100% word perfect on the stuff that you've recited and you've done no other work to kind of be in that space, be present, like you said, then it's not going to feel like an interactive give and take. It's going to feel just like you're up there reciting a monologue.
Yeah. And I often think of stand up in particular as this persuasive argument. Like I think in some ways we are just performing persuasive essays in front of strangers. And in that way, you kind of have to tweak your persuasion to the specific crowd that you're dealing in. And it doesn't make your argument different, but it does mean that the way that you present that argument, or at least the veracity in which that argument sort of like slams into their ears and faces, you have to gear shift it a little bit to make it fit better for the audience you have. And so the special tapings, thankfully, are an audience that already likes you and wants whatever you're offering. So you don't have to do crazy gear shifts, but that's what.
But even then, I think you do that thing where you're like, you're trying to convince people of something that like, you know, inherently they don't agree with, because they're people. But like in your special, you tell a joke that not to give it away, but like the idea of convincing an audience, like, I wanted to stab this child and you should also, like, that's inherently a very funny thing. And they do, because you explain it in a way where you're like, well, yeah, of course a person sounds terrible, but like as a setup that can be a bit fraught.
No, it was, I want this middle school girl to die, and in this essay, I will explain why.
That's your thesis statement, and now you're going to back it up. So talk a little bit about like how the special came together. Obviously, you did it with Netflix. I think because John Mulaney was involved in some capacity, right? It's like a producer or like consultant.
John Mulaney directed it.
Okay, cool.
And what a beautiful, wonderful, funny man who.
Yeah, I would trust his judgment on comedy.
He contributed far more than he should have to my nonsense. Yeah. But John and I sort of we sort of like struck up a bit of a relationship after the show Bust Down that I made with Sam J and Chris Redd and Jack Knight. And he was a really big fan of that. In a very, very insanely odd way, given the type of guy that John Mulaney is. I wouldn't have expected him to like the nonsense we were making.
White guy who sounds like he's from the 40s loves that show. Right? Like, I love that.
He loved us saying bitch and nigga on Peacock. And so he just was really into what we were building, and Peacock didn't move forward with that show. In that, I sort of reached out and mentioned that I was working on this material, and he was very kind to offer his services and contributions to it. And he made, you know, he couldn't have been more essential in sort of both helping it get over the edge, you know, with some of these spaces that were not so sure about me and what I was bringing to the table, but also just made it look beautiful and had so many insights on the right and wrong things to do with the comedy special.
Yeah, it's beautifully shot. The sound is really good, which is something that, like, weirdly, even like top tier specials sometimes aren't that way. So that, I mean, they did a really good job with that. Did you choose the venue? Because the venue is incredible.
Yeah, I chose the venue, and it's, I will say, it's easy to get the sound right when it's 110 people. It's it's a tiny, it's the Green Mill in Chicago, which is this old cocktail lounge that's probably most famous for Al Capone being like a mainstay there. He used to hang out there all the time, but now hosts this really beautiful afternoon show. Adam, we talked about this a little bit, called Paper Machete. That is described as this live magazine. And I think it's the best show in the country.
It's incredible.
It's really
fun. That's one of those things where it's like, you're not filming a special, but every time I do that show, I'm like, this is why I do this.
Yeah.
Like, this is why I chose to do comedy.
It's one of those treats. Yeah. Like, it, you know, specials and cool shows and things that we get to do are kind of that sweet spot of being like, hey, by the way, this doesn't suck all the time. Enjoy, bask in whatever this is, eight minutes not feeling sad. I grew up in Chicago. The Green Mill also is where the largest adult poetry slam is housed in Chicago. And so growing up, I dreamt of being a poet performing on that stage, never made it that far. in poetry to get that opportunity. And so I decided to usurp it and tell my little pee-pee jokes.
There you go. That's great. Talking about venues and to bring it to basketball a little bit, is there a particular NBA arena that has that feel for you, or if any of the ones you've ever been to just be like, this is a better place to consume basketball? Because like, I'm always diehard saying that like MSG is perfect. I loved Old Oracle where the Warriors used to play. Do you have a particular basketball stadium that you're like, this is the spot, this is where it's meant to be done?
I don't know that it is, but the United Center will always be the best place to me.
But the old heads will tell you Old Chicago Stadium was where it was really at. I'm not old enough to have gone there, but they'll tell you that.
Yeah. I mean, again, my sense, I've been to both, right? Like I remember,
okay,
but I don't actually remember. So for me, it's just like, nah, where home is makes the most sense to be watching good basketball.
Yeah. For sure.
But I just,
well, and your special was a home game in some ways.
It was a home game. Yeah. A lot of people I trusted to laugh were in the crowd. So it made it a lot That's easier. Awesome. Than playing for strangers in St. Louis. You know what I mean?
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
When you did the special, it's something I've always been interested in with stand-up specials. Did you do the thing where you like filmed like two of them and then they like composite the two into it? Or was it just like one show, one take that made the final cut?
Yeah, nobody's doing the raw dog version of it except for the ones that they do live on Netflix. Okay. And I'm sure people have critique of those.
It just doesn't seem necessary. Like, I guess I respect the balls it takes. And obviously Chris Rock is a legend, but like, it's an interesting way to do it.
Yeah, I think the excitement lives more in giving the audience a reason to sit back down in front of their TVs again. Mm-hmm. Like I was fortunate enough to do the Everybody's in LA show with Mulaney and write on that and have a few parts in that. But even with that, part of the excitement for everybody was like, whoa, live TV, we got to sit down and watch. And that's right. Kind of a big deal in this generation of nobody sitting down and watching anything the day it comes out. That said, comedy specials are very magical, sort of like dance. And yeah, we shot two shows. And we sort of blended the two. So if you watch carefully enough, audience members ain't sitting where they were sitting moments ago.
I was not watching it so closely to catch continuity errors. Be like, you know what? His collar was a little bit further
his
up.
His eyebrow.
No, I looked the same all the way through.
Exactly.
In between the shows, is there any note of like, do you whether it's you or a director or someone telling you, is it like, I kind of flubbed the line of this joke in the first set, so I got to make sure like I absolutely nail it in the second one? Is there pressure, or is it just kind of like, let's just do two and we'll let the editors kind of figure it out and make the perfect combined filming?
I shot the first one. It went really well. Like we, at the end of it, John and I were like, well, we got it. And now we get to just sort of play and
that's the perfect scenario.
Yeah, it was really cool. And then there were a few notes that he flew up of just small jokes that either my phrasing was slightly off or we didn't, wasn't like the heaviest hit, hardest hit in the set. And then the second show ended up being like that much better than the first one. And so it really, we were sort of flush with all kinds of options of good takes to use. So that was great.
I know this isn't the case, but I'm just imagining, since we are talking about basketball and comedy, that like, that you did go to a locker room and John Mulaney pulls out the whiteboard and like he's like, this joke, you know, he's coaching, you're like, you're getting back out there, the broadcasters are talking about the halftime adjustments that, you know, that Langston's making.
Well, you know what's funny is because of the setup of the Green Mill again could only fit 110 people with cameras in it, which meant that I did have to leave that building to go. Basically, the owner also owned like some office spaces upstairs, and my green room was like these abandoned office spaces that did have like weird whiteboards in them and shit. And we didn't draw nothing up, but the vibe you're referring to is certainly, it was very specific, where I was like sitting in like just the saddest office, and then Mandel, who's a very funny comedian who opened it
up. He's great.
He was hanging out, and then John Mulaney would pop in and be like, yeah, I think that was pretty good. And then we'd walk away. It was cool.
That's awesome.
All right.
Awesome.
I got one final question for you, and then we'll let you go. You're in the new show, English Teacher. It just came out as we record this last night. But by the time people listen to this, I think there'll be a couple episodes out. It's very, very funny. It also features Sean Patton, who's another one of my favorite comedians.
Yeah, but Sean Patton, Carmen Christopher. He's hilarious. They're both hilarious.
Did you use any of your teaching experience? Did you channel any of it in this character? Because in the first episode, we only get to see like kind of a taste of your character. I'm assuming there's going to be a more fleshed out version of it. Did you use any of that, or did you abandon it all?
Not one drop, Adam.
Hell yeah.
It was not asked of me to educate the youth in this program. I did not interact with very many pretend children. That's a nice thing for the listeners at home. No kids that you see on TV are real kids. And if they are, their eyes sing a sad song. You know what I mean? Yes. Like they're broken children. But for the most part, when they're playing high schoolers, they're young adults who kind of hang out.
So the people on Dawson's Creek weren't 16?
No.
They were 35.
John Travolta in Greece wasn't 18 years old.
I should clarify, Langston doesn't play a high school student, if that's unclear to anyone listening to this.
I play a gay adult. My sort of story inside of the show is more about the relationship with me and the main guy, Brian Jordan Alvarez, very funny person, the creator of the show. We sort of have a will they, won't they throughout the season. So no children were harmed in the making of English Teacher.
Langston, anything else you want to plug before we let you go? Where can people follow
please.
You? What do you want people to watch and all that stuff?
You can follow me at Langston Kerman on all social media platforms. I'm the only one, so if you see a dude pop up, it's probably me. Please go watch Bad Poetry. It's on Netflix. I would love for you to see it. Listen to My Mama Told Me. It's a podcast I run with David Bory. We talk about black conspiracy theories. It's chaotic and a real mess.
Did you ever do any of Kyrie's stuff on the podcast?
What are you asking me? What, Mike? What do you take me for, a fool? Of course we've talked about Kyrie.
I'm just trying to make sure that people want to check it out if they're like, I want to find specifically the basketball-related episode.
We have some very specific basketball-related episodes. I believe we talked to Will Ferrell even about whether or not he's the one white guest we've ever had on the show.
Good exception for him.
Well, he owns our podcast network.
I was going to say, it because he owns the...
So we tipped the cap to Daddy. But we talked about whether or not the NBA is rigged. We do the big heavies, you know what I mean, for basketball and sports in general. So if you are a sports person, that is available inside of this larger world of black conspiracy theory. And watch English Teacher. It's on FX, and it's really funny.
Yeah, and you and David are going out on tour, right?
That's right. David and I were taking our podcast out on tour this fall. Dates are available on websites, my own and others.
Beautiful.
and some other websites. Yeah.
Other
just a
websites
few
if you know where to look.
Yes, sir. Langston, appreciate the time, man. Good to see you. Thanks for coming on. And until next time.
This is fun, guys.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Horse. Horse is hosted by Adam Amawala and Mike Schubert. Our editor is Kensei Saramaki. The music is by Bettina Campomanes. The art is by Allison Wakeman. The website is by Kelly Schubert. And the social media is by both of the Horse Boys.
Thank you to our producer-level patrons, Polly Bird, Salvatore Testa, Siobhan Ellsbury, Don't Go Chasing Taco Falls, Bang Bang, Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed, Steph Curry for Valkyrie.
Bang!
That
was
like
me riding into battle, but I sounded like a ghost.
We've had multiple haunted Steph Curry.
Yeah, I should go like bang, like I should like sound that. Like I'm raging into battle. Yeah.
Hi Trish, Chase Underulo, Naked Rachel, Sidney Crosby is a vampire, Chelsea's cousin, Ginger Spurs boy, Balls to the Walls, and Mats Furley. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Horse Hoops and on Twitter at Horse_Hoops because...
Horse Hoops was trying to sell some illicit substances outside of a basketball arena in a full Benny the Bull costume. Can't do that.
You just can't. Nope. You can go to our website, horsehoops.com, for links to some of the stuff we talked about with Langston, some of his comedy, and certainly the Benny the Bull story, and much, much more.
Yes, and if you want to support the Horse Boys, you can go to patreon.com/horsehoops. You get access to ad-free episodes, you get stickers, you can get bonus audio, bonus content, all that stuff. And then you can go to horsehoops.com/merch to get SupNerd shirts and other digital items. But that is going to conclude this episode. We will conclude it by putting our hands in the middle and saying something on the count of three. What are we feeling?
Well, I don't want to be in the habit of jinxing things, but as we record this, my sister has headed to the hospital. Baby number two is imminent. So okay. I don't know the name. But why don't we do a can't wait to meet you on three.
All right, can't wait to meet you on three. 1, 2, 3.
Can't wait to meet you.
Hope it goes well.
Another little girl on the way.
Let's go, ladies.